Good morning, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today, we are recording episode 89, believe it or not. And today, I'm joined with Charles Campbell. Charles, he is the president of TVO, and also Charles is very active with Juntos. I think you're on the board with Juntos as well. You support them, you help them as well on that conference. Well, good to see you again. How was your travel?
It's good to see you too, Robin. It was just... What was it? 10 days ago, we were in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, we're together there. Yeah.
Having a Saudi coffee and...
Absolutely. And so I know you're always on the move. You were telling me earlier, like you have a, you know, you're always have events to attend to, and you practice what you preach. Basically, you sell globalization, you live globalization, and you explore the globe as you go along with it. So what's next for you? What's the next trip?
Gosh, well, that's a good summary. You know, I'm originally from New Zealand, and I live in Argentina, and my clients are around the world, and TBO deals with languages from the entire planet. So there's a lot of places to visit. Our mission statement is to bridge the gap between peoples and cultures. So as far as I'm concerned, travel to conferences and other events as an investment. You know, if I'm selling globalization, I have to be global. So I just got back from a whirlwind tour. I was at Loke World in Monterey, which was very good, very well organized, really interesting location, really good. I really enjoyed it. And then I went down to Mexico City to visit the venue of the Vamos Juntos conference, which is going to be held at the Hotel El Presidente, Intercontinental El Presidente, on March 14 and 15, 2025. That was an amazing experience. Coincided with the Day of the Dead celebrations in Mexico. It's like, kind of like Halloween, but with no plastic.
Or very little plastic. No plastic. I like that.
A lot of paper mache and elaborate costumes, and had a wonderful time. It was really nice. And the hotel just checked checked out every step of the way. It's the hotel where, I don't know, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, and even Fidel Castro stayed when they were in Mexico City. So it's definitely good. $225 a night for Juntos. It's a great
fee. It's a great price.
I'm very happy about that. And then I came home to Argentina for like 30 hours. I was literally at home for 30 hours, came down from Mexico to Argentina, and then I flew up four flights to Riyadh, to the International Translation Forum in Riyadh, you know, where we hung out. That was an amazing experience. It was so well organized.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. What was your opinion about it?
The hospitality of the Saudi organizers was just top notch. It was my first time in Saudi Arabia, my third time in the Middle East. Each country is so different. You know, we tend to generalize. So Latin America, you know, Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, they're all the same.
Yeah, that's right.
Eastern Europe, what's the difference between Serbia and Croatia and Poland? You know, that's so silly because each country is extremely diverse in itself. Saudi Arabia has 21 regions, as far as I understood. And there's different regions where they do different things and they eat different things and they have different weather and there's mountains and there's oases. And then there's, you know, well, it's just the diversity of culture is just absolutely amazing. That's one of the things I like most about my job is that I get to, you know, go out and meet people from such amazingly different cultures and situations. The International Translation Forum in Riyadh was extraordinarily well organized. It was at the Ministry of Education, although it was organized by the Ministry of Culture of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And we really were treated to a cultural experience in terms of the food, sipping little cups of Saudi coffee, which is more like a green tea, really, if you taste it all day long. The presentations were excellent. Everybody there seemed to have a doctorate. I was highly embarrassed because people kept calling me Dr. Charles. And I said, I'm not a doctor. And they said, okay, doctor. Couldn't shake the doctor off. But it's just an amazing investment in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in education. Like our hosts, most of them either had their PhD from an American university or European university or were doing a PhD. And there's a lot of grants for people to go to Saudi Arabia to do their postgraduate courses as well. So a huge investment taking place in education. The conference was very well attended. I mean, there were hundreds of people. I was interviewed by students. It was very interesting. A lot of things to learn. You know, I'd been to the Middle East before, but I hadn't interacted so much with local people on my previous trips because I was a tourist. This time, you know, I did do some touristy things like visiting some ruins and so forth, which was very interesting. But I was in an educational conference environment and met up with some friends who I've encountered before at other conferences. Wonderful people. I mean, you were there, Robin, so we got to hang out. Also, Adam Wooten from Middlebury, who I'd had lunch with. Just, I mean, this is a weird thing. You know, I have lunch in Monterey with Adam, and then I go to a wedding in Saudi Arabia with Adam like a week later. I mean, where are we meeting next week? So just a fascinating experience. I would highly recommend the International Translation Forum in Riyadh. It's about bringing the world to Saudi Arabia and bringing Saudi Arabia to the world.
Right.
So very interesting. And Saudi Arabia is opening up fast, and I sensed a huge enthusiasm for learning more about the rest of the planet. And I was very, very impressed. I would highly recommend it.
And I did notice that there's a hunger for learning. Even the students, when you talk to them, they're hungry to learn. And they ask a lot of valid questions about, you know, the industry, the technology, the future of the industry, etc. So they were not just sitting on the sideline listening to conversations and not being engaged. I thought the audience, the entire audience that was there, that was very engaged.
Yeah, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy, a lot of questions during the presentations, a lot of involvement. I don't recall how many times this translation forum has been organized, but it is a relatively new thing.
It's the third one, my understanding.
There you go. So, I mean, there's a thirst for learning. One thing that is really exciting about Saudi Arabia or Latin America or Asia or Africa is that the thirst for studying languages, studying translation, studying interpreting, studying localization is very strong and it's growing. And that is in contrast to what is happening in English-speaking countries. So Canada, where you live, United States, United Kingdom, New Zealand, where I'm from, and so forth. Many universities are finding that the number of students registering for their language programs is going down. I don't know if there's some sort of pessimism about learning languages. I don't know what it is. It's a combination of factors. And even some university programs have closed. I recently discussed this matter with Carrie Fisher, who is president of Women in Localization a couple of years ago, and with Karen Decker, the president of the Association of Language Companies of the United States. It is a big issue that concerns everybody. But in the emerging markets, the rest of the world where English is not spoken, studying languages is more popular than ever before because students view it as their passport to the world. It's so interesting, you know? So I'm really enthusiastic about that. And I see a parallel there with Argentina, where more and more people are studying translation and interpreting. More and more people are working in translation and interpreting and localization and associated roles like project management and quality management and so forth. There's a lot of optimism in the ecosystem. Attendance at conferences is growing. You know, it's like a growth track and a possibility track. And I saw that reflected in Saudi Arabia too.
Yeah, like I, you know, funny you mentioned that in Western countries, there's not much of excitement about it because I was just hot off the press. I was just reading here from a press release that came out. Budget cuts threaten University of Ottawa School of Translation and Interpretation amid rising demand for interpreters in Canada. So, you know, there's budget reduction in some of those academic institutions, at least in this case. And it's
kind of, Robin. I mean, how can you have an increased demand for translation and interpreting and then budget cuts for the
goes in the opposite direction, doesn't it?
So, you know, what does that mean? The government is saving some money by cutting back the budget of the University of Ottawa.
And I think there's a bigger picture here, and I don't know if you agree with that. We've talked about it a little bit in Riyadh. I want to call it the overzealous speed and velocity to go to achieve, you know, the benefits of AI before AI is mature enough to do to achieve the benefit of it. So basically, we're trying to, you know, I don't know how you say that in English, but cook something and it's not ready to cook yet, but we want to serve dinner right now. So,
well, Put it this way. The United States government sent every GI a pack of cigarettes and a Coke. Yeah. The whole armed forces addicted to cigarettes and Coke, right? And now, you know, they're desperately trying to reduce sugar and nicotine intake. So we roll this out with a huge rush, thinking that it's going to solve some short-term issues. And then I think there's going to be a reckoning, a stock-taking moment at some point in the future where questions will be asked. But in any case, I don't know any unemployed linguists. All the linguists I know are very busy. There's a huge amount of demand. I mean, if you look at the whole, I mean, look at this, just envisage this as if it were a movie. Rather than taking a photo of today, let's look at the whole movie. Where was this industry when I graduated from university in 1997? We were translating birth certificates, driver's licenses, the occasional, you know, a 10-page medical report was a good job. And translators and interpreters very often had to do other things to supplement their income, and translation and interpreting was a part-time source of employment and income. And that, you know, there's been a boom. Let's not forget that. You know, okay, confidence may be a bit shaken up, but if you look at the whole movie, where we started out, where we came from, and where we are now, I think that the evolution is extremely positive. And AI is opening up challenges and opportunities for everyone. And if you're a technophobe, then you may have to change industries. But then, you know, what industry doesn't involve technology today? I mean, gardening. Okay, gardening. There's like apps for gardening. And you got to get your fertilizer right. And, you know, I don't know. There's almost nothing you can do today without getting on the bandwagon with technology in one way or the other.
So how much is that related? Sorry. How much is that related to, you know, the industry inability or to take on change with open arms kind of thing? So it's more like a resistance at first and then slow adoption later. Like the process of taking on technology in the industry, I found like it's different than any other industry I've been involved in.
Well, there's this kind of nostalgic thing, you know. I wish I'd been in my prime before cat tools. So I could charge every word as a new word, or the golden age of the translation industry in Canada has passed, or I don't know where do people get these nostalgic ideas from. It reminds me of that movie Midnight in Paris, where these people travel back in time to the like the Belle Epoque because they felt that it was a better time to have lived. And then the people in the Belle Epoque want to travel back to the 80s because they're nostalgic for times gone by. If only I'd been in this industry, I don't know, in 1990, I would have made a killing, you know. We are at the best time. We've got the technology, you know. We've got the demand for our services. People are talking about languages like never before.
Right.
We're no longer translating birth certificates and driver's license. It's a great, great time to be in the languages industry. Yes, there are price pressures, but all this is to, you know, hello, linguists. There are price pressure for pretty much every industry that's out there right now. You know, it's a challenging economic and social times across the world. Harmony is on the down. Conflict is up. We have bombastic politics and we have a major war in Ukraine. We have major conflict in Israel and surrounding territories. There are many other conflicts happening in the world that are less discussed. You know, it's a challenging time. But I would tell you there, our grandparents probably thought, you know, that their times were challenging too. I'm really optimistic. I'm sorry to hear that programs are cutting back on funding in some countries. But the thing is, other countries are stepping up to the plate. Latin America and the Caribbean, Middle East, Africa. I'm going to Africa in February to Tanzania and Ethiopia. I'm going to attend a conference in Zanzibar. And it's all about the 1,200 to 3,000 different languages in Africa, depending on how you measure them, languages and dialects. And the tremendous growth and thirst for language learning and language teaching and translation and interpreting, demand for services, increased adoption of technology and standards. I mean, it's fascinating. This is a fascinating time to be in this industry. When I graduated, I mean, it was like, you know, what am I going to do? It was like, you know, you really had to forge your own path. And now people will say to you, how many languages?
Sorry, what technology did you use when you graduated?
Word processor and a huge library. I was going to say, people would say, how many languages did you study at university? And I said, well, I took a little bit of Italian, a little bit of Portuguese, but the language I translate is Spanish and English. And I said, oh, but you'll need to learn more languages, otherwise it won't be enough. You need to know like four languages. And it's like the Pope knows four languages. I don't know four languages. You know, and the idea was that you could learn more languages, therefore you would somehow, between all the different languages, have enough work to get by. I mean, it's a totally different reality. Yeah, we're in a totally different situation today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about this. I mean, it's a topic that keeps coming surface to surface every time we have a conversation about the topic of AI, is that, you know, you mentioned earlier, like, it's prosperity and there's a lot of translation to be done. There's a lot of content. The world just seems to be moving in our direction, not against us. And when I, you know, back when I started, you know, 20, 22 years ago, I used to have those conversations where I had to convince somebody, hey, listen, you're selling in Europe. You may want to consider translating your website to some European languages. And it was, you know, some cases, a hard battle to convince somebody that they need to translate, because at the time, it was not that, you know, it was more like official language translation in Canada, for instance, or translation for some necessity that they people want to do. But today, everybody seems to be aware, it seems to be focused that if I'm producing a product or service anywhere, I need to make that product or service information available in many languages, not just my mother tongue language. So you're right, the rise of the content that needs to be translated is very high now. Going back to your initial statement, when you first graduated, you were doing birth certificate and passports. But in this case here, doing large manuals, large pieces of content. And of course, I mean, every study I heard and I read everywhere that says we don't have enough people to do the translation. If you take the amount of content being created and you say, okay, well, here's the productivity, 2,000 words per day that everybody's been living on for the past 20 years. It hasn't advanced in some places. It says that you need, like, I don't know, a couple of billion people to translate the amount of content you're creating if you want to do it manually. So the delta is technology. We need technology.
Oh, totally.
Correct?
There would be no possible way to translate everything that is needed without it. So, you know, the horizons are vast. It's a truly exciting time. But, it is a little bit annoying when people come up to you at a dinner party and say, you know, aren't you going to have to get a new job in 5 years? But people have been saying that to me for the last 20 years, you know, so I just shrug it off and laugh about it. But busy times. I'm really excited. I'm really positive. It's been a challenging year, I would say, a bit of an up and down year. But going back to my analogy of a movie, I look at the whole movie rather than a static photo of one given moment. You know, and we're ending on a high note at TBO, so I'm very excited, very positive. We just had our end of year Christmas party, lots of fun. And we're ending on a high note, lots of business, good revenue, good customers, a great team. So, you know, very excited for next year.
Absolutely, great. And so congratulations, by the way, this is a great achievement. And it's good to hear your positive messages. And hopefully some of our audience, this positivity that you're exuding right now, it sticks with them. And if anybody who's got any doubt about where this industry is going, maybe listen to this conversation and get some lessons out of it, or engage in their own positive conversations. Why focus on the negative, right?
Well, certainly negativity can be like a rut, you know, a bad groove that you get stuck in. And it's been an extremely positive year, I believe, for me personally, on a family level, on a business level. You know, it hasn't been linear, you know, like there's been some curves. But, you know, as I said, ending on a high note and very optimistic for next year, very positive. You know, I live in the Southern Hemisphere, so we tend to take our annual vacations in January or February in the way that Europeans and Americans would take July or August off. So I am looking forward to having the whole month of January in Patagonia, which is my favorite part of this planet. I won't be fully disconnected, though. Obviously, there will be Wi-Fi, but there'll be some runs in the forest and some boating on the lake and so forth. So I'm very excited.
Well, you deserve a vacation after a long traveled year and a lot of hard work that you've done throughout the year. Talk to me a little bit about juntos in Mexico, for those who are not yet familiar with what's upcoming, what can we expect from that conference?
Well, where to begin? So I was in Mexico City 2 weeks ago, checking out the venue. As I said, we're going to be in Polanco, which is a cobblestone street neighborhood of Mexico City. Beautiful, lots of restaurants and cafes and parks. There's even a forest out the back of the hotel. The art scene is absolutely amazing. Of course, you have a lot of Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera influence. There's all sorts of museums and art galleries to check out. The whole aesthetic of Mexico City is fantastic. And it's Mexico. It's really Mexico. It's not going to
Cancun,
a resort in Cancun. And being in the pool all day long. It's really Mexico. So very excited. We have a fantastic speaker lineup. The call for papers is just closed. And I'm having a call with the other board members of Juntos later today to discuss the other people that have presented papers. But we have some of the speakers already defined. So we have a pre-conference workshop with Evandro Magalhaes, one of the best-known interpreters on this planet, on March 12. We have a pre-conference workshop with Andres Nedoma on March 12 as well. Very different topics. We have a pre-conference workshop with Renato Beninato of NIMSI, the gatekeeper of Latin America. He is an amazing supporter of Juntos. Juntos, by the way, means together in Spanish and Portuguese. Se juntos in Portuguese, juntos in Spanish, means together. And it's amazing to have the support of people like Evandro and Andres and Renato, you know, coming together to support us. So Renato Beninato will be giving a pre-conference workshop on March 13. Then the main conference starts on March 14 and 15. We have confirmed speakers. We have Jan Hinrichs, the founder of Lock Drinks, Lock Lunch, Lock Anything You Like Gatherings. He's going to tell us the story of that movement and how it crossed the entire planet. And surely he will be organizing a Lock Drinks event as well to, you know, to bring people together who may be attending the conference or otherwise. So that's exciting. We're going to have a panel of association leaders. We're going to have Karen Decker from the Association of Language Companies. We're going to have Jose Palomares from the Globalization and Localization Association. Hopefully we'll have someone from CLIA in Canada attending.
Yeah,
maybe
Peter.
You. Yeah,
me or Peter, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I'll be happy to join you.
I'd love to have Peter from CLIA attend as well. So it's going to be a panel about associations and the challenges they face and their priorities. We're going to have a presentation from Javi Diaz, who's one of the most amazing social networkers on this planet, from Bureau Works. Ingrid Christensen from INCO in the US is going to present another chapter of her book, The Language of Trust. She's a fantastic speaker, fantastic human being, wonderful supporter of Juntos. Dieter Runge from Booslingo, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his surname right, is going to fly in from Australia, that place west of New Zealand. And he's going to run our networking session to help everybody get to know each other well. He is a hilarious person, a wonderful sense of humor. So that'll be great. We have Adam Wooten from Middlebury.
Yeah, new friend.
My travel companion. Just attended a Saudi wedding with Adam. It's fascinating. Eating camel meat and rice with your hands and drinking Pepsi with 60 other men at a Saudi wedding because the women celebrate separately. Fantastic and very curious, interesting experience. So Adam is coming and he's going to give a masterclass as well. Adam is the director, if I'm correct, of the Localization Project Management Program at Middlebury and also their online master's program. So he is a fascinating person. And we have more speakers, but I just, you know, we don't have half an hour for me to list them all. So it's just wonderful.
No.
Wonderful group of human beings coming to support Juntos. And what we're looking for now in the call for papers is more input from the local community, so i.e. people in Mexico, people Mexicans, or people living in Mexico to present at the conference. And that's what we'll be reviewing later today.
How organized is the industry in Mexico, Charles? How organized is the industry in Mexico?
Well, that's the thing about Latin America and the Caribbean is that the industry is large, but it's not very well organized. But it's not together. So that's why Juntos is so relevant, I think. It's kind of under the surface, like an iceberg. I mean, there's a lot of linguists, a lot of translators, a lot of interpreters. You could just do some crude math by opening up LinkedIn and ticking the translation and interpreting localization box and putting in Mexico, and you'll see like lots of people. But the industry is not well organized at all. So when we started organizing the Vamos Juntos conference, you know, we saw that people had had, I don't know, New York City, there'd been like 20 different translation industry conferences, ATA, ALC, you name it, Gala in New York City. There'd been like, I don't know how many in Minneapolis and how many times that they had an event in Barcelona or Dublin, whereas nobody had ever organized an event for translation, interpreting, and localization companies in Latin America. I mean, other than maybe Buenos Aires. So we did Rio de Janeiro in 2023 with 55 attendees. We did Lima, Peru earlier this year in March with 155 attendees. And now Mexico City next year, we're hoping for 200, 220. And then I heard a rumor about Colombia 2026, but then there's also people supporting Argentina and also Guatemala. So, you know, it's fascinating destinations. We're combining top quality presentations, top quality venues with art and culture and food, and also very reasonable prices. I mean, the Intercontinental El Presidente costs $225 a night. And it's a beautiful five-star hotel. You know, if
you can get anything like this in North America.
I can stay at the Intercontinental El Presidente, then I can stay there too, you know. $225 a night is a bargain. And Juntos as a conference costs like one third of what it costs to attend a similar caliber event in North America or Western Europe. So it's a great deal. Many people combine like a family vacation or a personal vacation. Like people who went to Lima, several of them went to Machu Picchu in the mountains in Peru when they were there. I mean, there's a whole world to see. We're selling globalization. We got to get out there. You know, and Juntos is a great, great excuse.
So what I'm understanding from you is cultural immersion, get to know the city a little bit and understand Mexico on the ground in the middle of the Day of the Dead celebration, which whoever not attended this, it's pretty interesting. I haven't, but I've seen videos about it. It's crazy.
The Day of the Dead was amazing. I mean, we're not talking, and it's like not like the Macy's Parade in New York. I mean, this is like 2 million people. And the costumes are mostly made of either fabric or paper mache. You know, it's not plastic.
Yeah.
It's not like a Scream mask from the movie Scream, you know, and that's it. People put a lot of effort into these costumes. And they sing and dance, and it's just amazing. The food is way out there. It was a wonderful experience. Now, that was obviously just 2 weeks ago. So when we have Vamos Juntos, it will be in March. And there is supposed to be a solar eclipse on the day that we are having the rooftop party. So that's pretty cool. Hopefully we better see the solar eclipse while we're having a margarita or a mezcal or something.
Oh, excellent. And beside all the fun activities, I'm thinking there's a huge opportunity here for learning and idea exchanges and networking. And perhaps I'm assuming Mexico is close by enough that you would have, you know, well-attended conference from North America, I'm assuming? Although,
yeah, you're targeting... It's easy to get to for people from North America. I mean, Mexico City is 25 million people, right? Everybody has heard of Mexico City. Everybody knows where it is. But it's this funny thing that not so many people have been to Mexico City. They've been to the beach, but not to Mexico City. So people are really excited because we were originally thinking about doing the conference in Cancun. And people were like, oh, don't do it there. You know, no, being there. People spend the whole time in the pool. So people are very excited about Mexico City. And it's easy to get to. It's close. I live in Argentina, so everywhere I fly is a long way. Flying from the top of Argentina
to the bottom of the world.
It takes 6 hours to fly from the top of Argentina to the bottom of Argentina. It's a long country. So it's easy to get to for people from North America, so we are hoping that it will be very well attended. I'm sure it will be. That's one of the main reasons why, for example, we haven't organized the Vamos Juntos in Argentina, because it's simply going to cost people $500 more each, regardless of where they're coming from in the world to get to, so, and longer flights. So Mexico is very exciting and easy to get to option. There are flights from everywhere.
And I checked the pricing. It's not that expensive, to be honest with you, in comparison to others. Like I was like on your, what you call it, Eventbrite page, and it looks like $727 and some odd change. I'm not sure this is converted to Canadian or is it in US? I have no idea. But
The prices on Eventbrite are in US dollars, and the prices vary depending whether or not you're a Juntos member or you're a member of a partner association. Juntos has reciprocal partnership agreements with almost every association of translation, localization, and interpreting companies in the world. So if you're a member of a partner association, then you get a discounted fee. If you're not a member of anything, it's rare, then you pay the full fee. But it's still very, very affordable. It's like a third of the price of an event in the United States or Canada or Western Europe. And a lot of fun. I mean, we got really highly ranked feedback from the attendees about the quality of presentations, the quality of social and networking activities, the food and service. So the standard was set high by the conference in Lima. And the board of Juntos, which is Saul Villegas from Mexico, David Mego from Peru, Rafael Sosa from Brazil, Maria Jose Alberto from Argentina, and Roslyn Famous from Puerto Rico, and myself, I don't know, citizen of the world. We are on the board.
Yes, you are.
We're working on different things to make this all happen. And there's a lot of stuff to bring together when you're organizing a conference, but it's a lot.
So I know you're always on the go. And before we started the conversation, you were telling me about a conference that you're attending in February, which sounded very interesting in Africa. Talk a little bit about this one. Put a plug for them.
Sure. So the conference is taking place in Zanzibar, which is an island that is part of Tanzania. It's called the East Africa Interpreters and Translators Conference. It moves around different locations in East Africa. It was in Rwanda. I attended it just before the pandemic in Arusha, which is very near Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. They also had it in, I think, Mombasa in Kenya. So it moves around different locations in East Africa. And East Africa, I mean, there's no Switzerland in Africa. There's no country that's in the middle and is neutral. And, you know, and the Latin Grammys take place in Miami. There's no middle ground in Latin America either. And the same thing happens with Africa. There's no heart. There's no center of Africa. The east of Africa is very different from the west of Africa. Muslim countries in the north are very different from the rest. And I just horrifically oversimplified the different geographical and cultural variations. There are between 1,200 and 3,000 languages, as far as I'm informed, depending on how you measure dialects and languages. Need for translation and interpreting is extraordinary. Africa mm-hmm. is the fastest growing continent in economic terms and in population terms in the world. So there's a lot to be done and a lot to be learned. And the conference that I attended 5 years ago, I mean, a lot has probably happened in 5 years, but it was about 100 people. And it was very well organized and wonderful learning experience. We're selling globalization. I mean, we can't
speak.
You have
to understand that.
As I said, we can't speak five languages. Maybe you do, but I can't speak five languages. But I have to be well informed about the different languages in the world, the markets where these languages are used, the needs of the end users, and so forth, in order to understand what I'm doing every day of the week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very affordable conference, and it's a long way to Zanzibar, but, you know, no pain, no gain. It's a long way to Africa from the US, but it's worth it. Put it that way.
Yeah. So looping back and to close the loop on our conversation, the way we started, do you believe in the concept that says, you know, those, I want to call it low penetration languages, low number of people spoken languages, be it the African languages or the Aboriginal languages in Canada and a few other places, would be slower penetrated by the AI technology than the common used languages?
Good question. Obviously, French, Italian, German, Spanish, Portuguese, Russian, Chinese, Japanese, and Korean are the languages that are going to be hit first by any new language technology because they are the highest volume languages. Spanish is by far the highest volume language in the United States. French is by far the highest volume language in Canada and Western Europe. There's a mix. In Western Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Asian languages are more prevalent. So demand is huge for those languages, and therefore investments are made accordingly. It would seem to me that other languages will be later to the party because investments are made later, not because the languages are necessarily not appropriate for language technology, AI and machine translation. That said, I mean, there are languages where there's a critical resource shortage already, and clients and LSPs are going to require linguists to use different processes and tools and so forth. They may not find the resources with the training to do so. I don't know. This is, you know, it's part of the learning curve, part of the adoption curve with different languages and different markets, different realities. I'm not an expert on Aboriginal languages from Canada. I would envisage a situation where there could be some resistance to technology in certain communities, at least at the start. But there's such a demand for translation that if we don't use technology, we won't get the job done.
Yeah.
The question is, we want to use technology to the point where we're all replaced. And I don't see that happening. I think that's just baloney.
I know.
You know, there's a lot more jobs in the language industry today than there were 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, there were a lot more than 10 years ago before that. Translation and interpreting is not new. It's been around for a long time. And I think we have a long road ahead of us of work where we are going to be in a situation where if we use technology appropriately, we'll be able to charge more and position ourselves in a more important place in the value chain. So I'm very optimistic. In terms of the adoption in Africa, ask me in February after I've been to Tanzania and Ethiopia. The reality on the ground may be different, but I will be in a better position to answer that question after I've been to the...
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do a post-conference debrief with you. But the logic there, I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, we can debate that some other time, is that if you have, let's say, a group of people, let's say 1,000, 2,000, they speak specific dialect or specific language. You don't have enough corpus, you don't have enough data for AI to get trained, get well enabled for those specific small amount of data. And the reason, I think, and based on the conversation I've been having on this channel, that the, you know, the FIGS languages and the comparable in the Asian languages have gone first in terms of, you know, high adoption rate in AI is because the large amount of data available. And as you go through down the list and that data becomes smaller and smaller, the AI gets harder to train, if any.
Yes. I can only agree to that. There is much less data and much less money. So, yes, I'm not surprised at all that certain languages would get be ahead of the wave. But not because the language in itself is more given to the technology. Now, let's remember that there are many, as I said, 1,200 to 3,000 languages in Africa. So where do you make your investments? Right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there are languages that are, you know, spoken by millions of people. There are languages that are spoken by hundreds of thousands of people. So that's another issue. Then there are languages that are not very well codified. So you think about Somalia. You know, Somalia is a country that is struggling to be a country. So obviously, the languages in Somalia are not well codified in terms of having universal dictionaries or having a governing body as you have in, for example, Spanish with the Real Academia Española, which is the authority which says whether or not a word is a word. Despite what people think in Latin America and the Caribbean, they still decide in Madrid what is a word and what is not a word in Spanish. And that serves a purpose. Whereas with many languages in Africa, there is no governing body determining, you know, what's right and what's wrong. So that makes it very difficult for translators and interpreters, because they say, your translation is wrong, you know, because my linguist says so. And then it's like it's a shouting match, an undignified argument about what's right and what's wrong, because there's no... Or there are either no rules whatsoever or not enough rules, or the rules say that anything goes.
And where do you draw the line between professional translation or colloquialism translation, right? So there's that, I want to say it a certain way. There's kids on the street, they speak languages, or kids go to, you know, I listen to my nieces and nephews nowadays, they use words I never used them before. And college kids, they use them. Like, I got to ask, like, what do you mean by that? Translate it for me, even though we're speaking the same language.
There you go. There you go.
So listen, yeah, I want to thank you so much.
I was just going to say, it's an amazing travel schedule. You know, this year
you're I've been to
Mexico twice. I've been to the U.S. Four times. I've been to France and England, Saudi Arabia, Poland, Ukraine by bus. That was rough.
Hopefully you're collecting some air miles, Charles.
Yeah, I'm like a premium gold or whatever with like three or four different airlines. So, you know, next year is very exciting. Probably going to be attending a conference in China. I'm going to Tanzania and Ethiopia, as I already mentioned, and Vamos Juntos will be in Mexico City, March 14 and 15. So that's obviously going to be taking up a lot of my energy in the first 4 months of the year. And then we'll see how we go. And I also heard that Lockworld is going to be back in Monterey. I was going to say Montreal. Monterey. I forgot to say I was in Canada this year, too, of course.
Yes, you were.
That's why Montreal sprang to mind. So Lockworld is going to be back in Monterey, which is a place I love.
Repeat.
So I will surely be there, too. So, you know, going to be a busy year.
Well, I wish you in 2025 as much a success as you had in 2024, which sounded like a successful year for you. So,
thank you. Certainly ended on a high note. I mean, it was a very challenging year, but ending on a really high note.
Congratulations. Very good.
Thank you very much, Robin.
I want to thank you.
So I'll see you in Mexico City in March then.
I hope so. Fingers crossed. If I can convince my wife to come with me to Mexico, I'll be there.
Awesome.
I don't think it should be hard to convince her, but she likes
it. There you go. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to thank you so much, Charles, and I want to thank the audience for joining me today on this recording of the podcast with Charles Campbell. From us, from the audience to Charles, we wish you the best of luck on all your endeavors. Stay safe in all your travel and come back home to your family safe, and continue on with the good work and continue propagating the good messages about the localization industry. It's not one going to wither away. It's only going to get positive from here. And it's not a gloom and doom, guys. It's absolutely positivity going forward. I have not seen anybody, as you said, Charles, earlier, I have not seen anybody losing their job. I think the industry has created its own ecosystem that creates, that evolves, that morphs things into different things, like jobs morphs into different jobs. If you're doing specific things today, tomorrow you're going to do a little bit, something a little different, but you'll always have a job in the language industry as the momentum continue to grow for language demands globally. Thanks, Charles, for being with me again today. Thanks to our audience for joining us on this journey today with our recording with Charles. And if you don't mind liking and sharing the content, I really appreciate it. And thanks, Charles.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Stick around, okay?